Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Pod Stallions. This is our second October episode and our final Halloween episode. How are you this Halloween, Jason?
Well, you know how I feel about Halloween. I try to keep the feeling going all year. Nothing breaks my heart more than walking into, say, Target a week into October and seeing Christmas ornaments. It gets, I swear to God, they move it up every year. And I think we need to rise up as a people that love this holiday and push back on this stuff. And I have a theory about it. I have a theory why it keeps moving up. And I don't know if this is remotely accurate or if this is it says how stupid people are. But if you do any Christmas shopping, and I don't know who does Christmas shopping in October, but I assume some people do, you can't return stuff. So if it's like if it's that far in advance of the holiday, by the time the holiday comes, you can't return the stuff. You can only return maybe for an exchange. I think it's maybe 30 days or 60 days, or I don't know what. But maybe the stores are pushing it up to get more sales, but then you can't return stuff after the holiday. That's my theory, that it's more lead time. But regardless, it gets away the
I
beauty
think you
of
just don't
Halloween.
want to mess with Big Santa. 'Cause this is a guy who got you things and now you owe him.
He does have a large he does have a large reach, doesn't he? Santa.
And
His operation.
I'm not bad mouthing him.
No, I wouldn't dream. I mean, listen, I got nothing against, Santa or the elves or Christmas as an idea or Christmas specials or, even some of the songs. I just don't need to hear them 2.5 months before the holiday. I don't need to see any of it that, that far in advance is all I'm saying. Like, can you
It's
follow me?
sad. It's sad we have to devote a part of our Halloween special to this because
Yes.
it's like, yeah, it lives rent-free in our heads. I know.
Here's the upside. The only upside is I have noticed, and we've talked about this before, that I really think we're entering into this like golden age of horror. And what I mean is not everything that's getting made and coming out or getting made as a show is a winner or is good. But the breadth of what's being made, it reminds me of that period in the 80s when horror movies were more frequent, kind of. I mean, there just weren't as many movies being made then as well. There weren't as many platforms, obviously. But now it feels like, the whole streaming service Shudder, which is just horror, and original programming and original movies. And, when I go to like Monsterpalooza, it's insane what I see. Like, you're waiting 2 hours to get in with a ticket, and it's just a sea of black t-shirts. Black t-shirts with a horror poster on the front, and that's a good thing. All of that is good,
Oh, dude,
and I
I just
like I
did
said.
a horror thing at a I didn't vend at it, but I went to it as a horror kind of like what do they call a dead format show? It's basically based on VHS movies and that sort of thing, but it extends out into toys and other things and it's a riot. It's a really fun. I had a blast. I always enjoyed horror people. There was always sort of like a camaraderie there. So yeah, I really enjoy it. And I agree with you.
Well,
So one thing I'm really enjoying right now.
there's a they've done this a couple of years now, I think on Shudder, which is the Fangoria Chainsaw Awards. Like it's their Oscar ceremony kind of. I think last year David Duff Malton hosted it. This year it's a couple of people I don't recognize. But Fangoria is still an ongoing thing. Like somebody bought the name and
Yeah.
the issues
I
are
know somebody there
$20 an
actually.
issue. If they're like they're the magazine's like $20 an issue. It's kind of crazy. But a buddy of mine got a dual subscription by accident, so he gives me all the duplicates and stuff. So it's the fact that that's still a thing is great. But as they were doing, the show is kind of cheesy but kind of fun. But the categories, best makeup, best original script, and blah 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 blah. And then you get, but Nicolas Cage won, and he sent in a video greeting, like thank you so much for this award, like that kind of legitimizing this stuff. I love it. But in the like about 10 minutes in, one of the hosts kind of said, so what is Fangoria? And then they went into the history of a magazine called Starlog
what?
That used to be about science fiction.
Oh,
And they kind of gave the history of how Starlog led to Fangoria. And I'm like, this is great.
Yeah.
This is so cool that these brands are still being kept alive and that more and more people. And the great thing about the horror that's going on now is there's so many different streams of it. You know, if you want gore, there's gore. If you want ghost, there's ghost. If you want, you know, the slasher type stuff that you and I don't really gravitate towards, there's plenty of that. But there's more of the A24 stuff where they're kind of pushing the boat out, trying. You know, I don't know if you saw Weapons, but I rewatched it last night because I saw it in the theater.
Yes, I have. I have seen it.
I just think it's a great flick. I think it's a light year from the previous movie this guy did, and I'm like, I'll see anything this guy does. This was a really well put together thing, and it made a ton of money, and so we'll get more original content like that, hopefully. So
yeah, I the one thing that I found weird was I had just recently watched Uncle Buck, so Shanice Kobolowski there. Oh, that's the villain.
Oh, the girlfriend. He's
yeah,
the girlfriend. Oh, yeah. Well, you know what's funny? When I saw it in the theater, I was 5 minutes into her first scene, and I'm going, I know this voice.
Yeah.
Who is that? It took me a while to figure out who it was because she was so off the wall in that performance.
I was shocked that nobody did a meme of, because she has a great scene with Macaulay Culkin, which probably was one of the inspirations for Home Alone, where like he is waiting by the door and he's looking through the mail slot and interrogating her. How did everyone miss the ball on parodying this with Weapons? You know?
No, and that kid was great too in Weapons. The little boy was terrific in the movie. I just thought it was great.
But you know, what I do with modern horror is I usually wait until my daughter tells me to watch it, and then I watch it.
Okay.
Because I guess
seen Weapon.
And I think the last movie she brought me was Sinners, and I was planning on seeing it, but it also sounded like a little bit like something I'd seen before, and then I watched it, and I was like, oh no, that's actually, you know. There was a lot of hadn't seen before. I enjoyed it.
I didn't love the climax, but I thought it was really well done. I thought it was good. Sinners.
Yeah.
You know, great cast. Yeah.
I was planning on doing something else. I remember that. I said, yeah, I'll watch a few minutes of it. And then I just didn't leave.
Now, did you see Barbarian?
No.
Did you see the one, Barbarian? Okay. So that was the movie the guy that did Weapons did. Mm-hmm. A couple years ago, and it's good, you know. It's I enjoyed it. I'm not giving anything away, but it takes some interesting little turns, and you go, oh, maybe this is not what I thought, and was, you know, enough to kind of put him on the radar, and you go, okay, you know, I'll see the next thing. Well, this one to me is a huge leap in quality. But if you haven't figured it out as you're listening, and if you haven't read the description, we're gonna break down our, you know, like, we don't need an excuse to watch scary movies year round or horror things or revisit classics, but we thought we'd come up with sort of a list of five each of sort of our go-tos, like our annual kind of, you know, can't get to Halloween until I see this and kind of thing. And it's not etched in stone and it's in no particular order, but we thought we'd keep it simple.
I'm fresh from my second annual Cabin in the Woods weekend, where my wife and I go to a cabin in the woods. It's beautiful.
Worship the devil.
Worship the
devil. The Necronomicon.
As one does. Oh, yeah. I make all those jokes. Hey, there's a book in here. You know, oh, look at this doll. You know, but.
Going to town to the store and get a human sacrifice to bring back in the cabin. Tie them up in the basement.
Get in that cornfield. They said, you want to get drunk? You know.
I know what you do every year. The teenagers that need you to buy booze are like, well, come back to the cabin. And then you tie them up and sacrifice them. You know, I'm familiar with your traditions.
They're strange to you, aren't they?
So this list is more of a compilation of you.
Yeah, like we start with five, and I think we're up to about 15. And I'm not sure how many of these I've already previously discussed in episodes. So there's a couple I'm just going to omit because I think we've done them before. Like my wife's a very big fan. Well, we're both huge fans of Halloween 3 and Jaws 3.
Jaws 3 is in Jaws 3D.
Yes. And I'll tell you the reason.
Well, you don't have to omit them. I mean, I say.
Okay. Well, I'm just, maybe I'll use them as one. Just in case.
That's allowed.
Do you want me to start with that?
Sure. You go ahead. Your party.
Okay. Well, it's our party. I'll cry.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's our party. You're right.
Yeah. The Halloween 3, I think, is one of those movies that I actually like. It's kind of strange, and there's a lot of layers to it. And, you know, I know it was universally dismissed as, like, didn't have Michael Myers in it. And I wish it had any other name, just to see how it would be judged now.
Right.
I like its soundtrack. I love Tom Atkins and Stacey Nelkin, and it's got Dana Harley in it. And we just kind of came up this year with the Halloween, the weekend isn't over until Colonel Cochran claps, was kind of the joke we made this year, this year. Okay. Because like that's the last movie we ended up with, and we always are going to end with that movie. We kind of start with Jaws 3 because I think it's because we were married on July 4th, and every time we go away on that weekend, there's a Jaws marathon on TV. And so we've seen Jaws on every one of our vacation getaways.
Okay.
And we just kind of both, I guess, watched Jaws 3 once together, 20 years ago, and realized that we both thought it was as goofy as hell and like the most entertaining of the series.
Hey. Okay, that's more of something that is more of a sort of landmark for the two of you, but you enjoy watching it together.
We both mutually enjoy those films. With Jaws 3, it may be a little bit, as we get older, we say we ironically love them, and then it just kind of goes, and okay, we just really like them. That one, I think Halloween 3 is, like, for me, no longer in the ironically love. Well, I just think it's great.
Halloween 3, I can't argue with the, I don't know if Jaws 3 is ever going to get a reevaluation. It hasn't happened yet.
I
think it's more ironic than anything. But Halloween 3, what's crazy about that is, when it came out, it was pretty much, dismissed. And of course, like you said, everybody said the same, where's the lead guy? Where's the Michael Myers thing? And the last, 15, 20 years or so, it's taken on a different life. But when I think about it now, it's like, it's one of the most John Carpenter-y things that John Carpenter's ever done, really.
Yeah.
Because you got Nigel Neal.
Well, and that's where he did the Quatermass show.
Carpenter fucking loves the Quatermass stuff. I mean,
this is something
Prince of Darkness. I think it's like not Miskatonic universe, but it's something like all the names of all the professors and things in that school are, different characters from all this pulpy kind of stuff that he loves. Wasn't the intention of three, and this is really ballsy to do this, say, well, I'm sure everybody's going to expect another chapter of this Michael Myers thing, but what if we could do a thing with the Halloween word, name, brand, and turn it into like a, you know, each one is going to be a separate story. Like if we could do this every couple of years, and it would be a, you know, almost like an anthology thing where each one is original. And I think that was the intent.
That was the intent. And I honestly think that, I think that was supposed to be what happened going forward from the first one. And, or at least that was someone's intention, if I'm not correct. But I think he wanted
to do it after 78, you're saying?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He didn't really, this was never supposed to be franchised. And I don't know if he got forced into two. By the way, I have no interest in that movie, Halloween 2. I just have none.
You've seen it though.
In fact, I've seen it like probably more than three times, because it's always like, you know, I love one and I love three, you know, but it's just there.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm sure there's a million people who are booing me. Well, sorry. Six people who are booing me. that say, no, Halloween 2 is the best. But it's like, yeah, but I guess it's just like mileage varies on, you know, what you enjoy from the series.
There's people that love all of them. I mean, I think I've seen all of them. And man, I personally think they get really bad. Like they're just, you know, just, I mean, if people love them, great. It's just not my thing. I think three is great. I love the original, obviously, but you know, I haven't even watched it yet this year. So it's one of those that I admire and I appreciate and I like it.
Yep.
But it's not in my sort of go-to.
It is our Friday night viewing this year.
So that's going to be Friday night.
Always.
I mean, it really is. I mean, it's got the reputation it does for a reason. I think it's held up, and it's interesting how that is the gold standard. Like, I mean, did you ever see any of the trilogy of the new ones that were done, the David Gordon Green ones from the last, you know, 6-7 years? Did you see any of those?
When they
brought Jamie Lee Curtis back, you know, I
don't know why that, I was thinking of those. The first one I thought was great. The second one
was good.
In terms of like things done with this franchise that, I don't know, that just had more to it than a lot of things. And then the second one, I was like, oh my God. And then the third one, yeah, it was different. And I don't.
First one I thought was good, and it kind of did the trick. Although I hated the fact that they made her such a basket case. Like she was, you know, they had to go to the nth degree where she's a.
Yeah, she's, you know, Linda Hamilton in Terminator 2.
Yeah, exactly. They had to go all the way, you know, put the needle all the way to the other, you know, like the wackadoo kind of measurement. The second one, I was just like, what? And then when Anthony Michael
Hall, staffing.
When Anthony Michael Hall is leading the you know, villagers to, you know, go to the hospital and kill people or whatever, I'm like, what? And then the third one, I walked out of.
Oh, did you?
And I count on one hand the number of movies I've walked out of, but it got so ridiculous in that third act. I went, nope, this is a piss take now. This isn't, now you're just, you know, but I don't think it is, because then he went and did The Exorcist one, which is, I've only seen bits of, but it's diabolically, ridiculously bad. So yeah. I think it's genuine. I don't think that new trilogy is like, you know, ironic or a spoof. I think they really think this is good horror.
I watched that third one like with this like crazy amount of like, where's this going? You know, like I couldn't look away from it.
The boyfriend in the sewer and like the, you know, like becoming the protege, and I'm just like, what the fuck? It was just Ludicrous.
I watched it right to the bitter end because I was like, yeah, I get it.
No,
I just don't want to be, I don't like, I get you. My problem is that I'm me and I'll be sitting in bed going, ah, now I gotta know how that ended. And it's just easier to do it, like to watch the ending.
no, I was so angry in the theater. Like, I can't believe I paid money for this. Like, it got me angry. It's like, did you see the new, there's a new, a recent, Wolfman
Oh
movie that
yeah.
was made with the blonde woman from
Yeah,
Dog.
can I confess to the world that I like her in a lot of things actually. And I like her on this.
No, I like her. I
But
just can't say her
I
name.
she sounds like Sandy Squirrel on
She does
Ozark,
have a very,
and
yeah.
that I call her Sandy Squirrel to like
Yeah.
the three people who, because I'm
The
over,
Ozark thing, the
yeah.
Ozark thing really started to grate on me. And
Yeah.
luckily, like, she wasn't that in Weapons, and she was fine. But that Wolfman movie is so bad. It's so, you just go, this is what you're putting money, like, this is what you're
And you know
taking
what
title like
bothered
that.
me
Just,
about that
and it
one
made me
was,
angry. Like, stuff like that just makes me
well,
angry.
for
Like,
me, what
there's
bothered
so much
me
just
about
trying to
that
get made.
was they
Say
had,
again?
so what bothered me about that was they had done such a great job with that Invisible Man because you had,
That was good.
yeah, and it
That
had,
was
you know,
good.
it was all on the performance of Elizabeth Moss, and she sold the movie.
It was
And
pretty good.
yeah, and I thought, okay, so I see her as the lead, and I think, okay, we're gonna go this way again, which, hey, it worked the first time, and it's fun to watch. So, and you know, they use a strong female lead to tell the story, and I was all in, and I watched it, and I don't know what, like, I don't know if they were trying to, there was a like a morality tale in there or some kind of terrible, it
Maybe
didn't
just
make sense.
bad writing, bad stories, bad ideas. And again, I don't know how you get that as a paper script in your lap and go, I got to do this one. I got to be part of this.
Yeah.
Because it is just a waste of money and time. And it's the kind of thing that starts to make me angry, where you're just like, all these things that can't get
They're
made,
getting
and this is
mad.
what you're spending. And this is what you're spending time and money on, is ridiculous. Okay, so your first one is a dual, it's a
Yeah,
double feature,
it's
like
yeah, it,
DVD
in fact,
package of.
believe
Now,
it or
here's the
not,
thing:
the Jaws.
does
Pardon?
Jaws qualify as horror? Does that qualify as like a horror movie?
I would
Now,
think
does that have
so.
a
Yes,
category?
I would. I put it squarely in
Okay.
that. It's not a Christmas movie unless it's Jaws 4, which is, I will tell you this, I finished Jaws 4 this time as well. I'd never sat and watched the whole thing. It pissed me off at some point and I'd walk away. I don't know if it's Mario Van Peebles' accent or, I don't know. But the ending of that movie, like that movie's got so many Roy Scheider appearances, it's offensive. And the ending of the movie where she kills the shark, but they flash back to Brody doing it. I gave the
What's really
television the finger.
ironic about the fourth movie is the only reason that she was in Jaws in the first place was that she was married to the head of the studio. That was the only reason she was in that film. Spielberg got pressured to put her in that film. And she's not bad in it, but she's not, I mean, Scheider had issues with her, I think, and she said it years later that he was kind of prickly, but it was like, you shouldn't be qualified to be in this thing on screen with me, basically. That was kind of the attitude.
Yeah.
And then 3 movies later, she becomes the lead and has done little to nothing else that anybody knows, other than we can't get anybody else to do this movie, so let's grab her from the past, and stick her in the fourth. I mean, the fourth one, just, I think I saw it once on video just to see it, and it's just beyond I mean, it really is one of the high watermarks of franchise bloat or laziness, if you will. Okay, so for me, I'm watching nothing but scary stuff all month long. We watch scary stuff all through the year, of course. But for me, there's always like four or five that I kind of have to get to, just to, even though I've seen them a million times, know them, you know, very well. And actually, I can do a double on this one too, just to do it. John Carpenter's The Thing is always in that, you know, five or six that I have to.
Yeah,
that
same
I have
here.
To see, even though I've seen it a thousand times.
Yeah, but it gets better.
Time, I thought I did the 2011 The Thing, followed by the 1982 The Thing.
Wow.
And now, again, you can't mess with perfection. Like, you're trying to get anything remotely in the orbit of this thing that shouldn't be touched is a futile gesture, kind of. Now, yeah. I'm not saying that the 2011 Thing is a great film. It's a fine film. It's just fine. And what's sad about it is the guy that directed it, was a Norwegian director, never directed. He left. He was so upset about the process and how much tinkering there was with what he was trying to do that he never directed a film in the U.S. again. But
do you know that actually my friend Sean did the practical effects in that?
Well, that's what I was getting to. The practical, it was supposed to be mainly practical effects. Yeah. That's what it was going to be. And then they came in and said, no, it looks too dated, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So if anybody bitches about the CGI, it's the studio's fault, not the filmmaker.
Yeah.
And you, regardless of what you think of it, you can't deny the care and effort that was taken. So when you finish it and you get to the 82 one, it is kind of fascinating to see the axe on the wall where the axe was, you know, when they get to the station that's been, everybody's been killed at, when the doctor and MacReady go to the station where the ice is.
They did a reverse Prometheus.
So they did a reverse and all the little bits, including when they pick up the corpse from the first location to get it back to the base, and they, you know, take the blanket off, and it's like the two faces that are kind of
Remember from Starlog.
You go, this is, I got to give them an A for effort to even attempt it. And it becomes kind of an interesting viewing experience because it takes you right up in the end credits to the dog running through the snow. And then you could just pop on the 82 one. I'm not saying I'm going to do it every year or do it ever again, but I wanted to see how specific they got with the trail that was left in from the first one. At the station, the guy
I really think you had a really good idea there, and I don't hate that 2011 film because I know it was screwed with.
Everybody in it's good. The cast is good.
It doesn't matter. Like somebody actually took the like without taking that essence out, that practical effects, you'll never see the film right. I was thinking,
and there's really cool concepts. Conceptually, what they were doing with the morphing and the you know, the creature, the Lovecraftian way the creature kind of separates. There's really cool ideas in there, you know, with design, but hindered by the CGI, which, you know, already looks kind of dated. And again, I don't know if there's footage that exists of all the practical stuff that got cut out. But it's a shame that that happened because I think it would have held up better. Yeah.
I really kind of like that idea, and I had heard that it is pretty consistent. I was just thinking that you and I should write a screenplay, based on, you know, two filmmakers taking a beloved property and getting a prequel and, like, you know, basically doing everything right and then having the studio come in and just ruin it and have like a fatwa on our heads. That would be a fun script.
Yeah. There was actually a movie made years ago called The TV Set. with Sigourney Weaver as a network head and David Duchovny as the writer of this pilot they're going to make for pilot season. And it was written by, I think it was written and directed by Jake Kasdan, Lawrence Kasdan's son.
Oh, yeah.
Basically was saying, this will give you an idea of the madness just at a network in trying to just get a pilot made. Forget about a series. Just the process of the pilot. And without giving anything away, like, it starts as this kind of drama slash dramedy about a guy coming back home to a small town after his brother commits suicide. And it's got a little bit of humor, but it's mainly kind of a, you know, got heart to it and kind of, you know, pulls at the heartstrings. And as it goes on and they people keep sticking their fingers in, and then the network head kind of goes, does the brother have to kill himself? You know, could it be that maybe he goes to jail? Where the companies go, no. The whole essence of the story. And he just keeps getting tipped away because the network got people and the manager and everybody's going, look, it's only one little change. It's not that big of a deal. You can still get the show done the way you want. And by the time it gets to the upfront where they're showing the pilot, there's fart jokes in it and fart sounds and, you know, like sound effects and shit. It's become the complete antithesis of what he was trying to make in the first place. And that's what this reminded me of. Just like, no, we're going to do this. We're going to make it a love letter to the original. We're going to show you a little bit of what happened prior. And even things like, there's a moment in there where the head scientist guy, the villain kind of guy, says to somebody, like, do me a favor, stay off the radio. Now that we've got this thing, we've got the alien here, let's just kind of keep the chatter. Like, do me a favor and don't, you know, keep the radio lines free, basically. So when you get to the 82 one, and what's his name? Not Windows. Is it Windows? Who's the guy with the headphones that's trying to get people on the radio? And they're like, did you get anybody yet? And he's going, no, there's nobody out there. Nobody's responding to the... You go, oh, well, that's in the 2011. It's like, stay off the radio, basically. Even little things like that is like a little bit of a little detail. You're like, oh, that's, you know, good for you, you know?
Because we freaking noticed.
The 82 one is something that as many times as I've seen it, I still catch little tiny things that maybe I didn't notice as much the previous 10 times.
Oh, yeah.
It's, to me, that's one of the gifts that keeps on giving. And it's just, you know, it's just, I never tire of it. It's kind of a masterpiece, I think, you know.
I stand with you.
An all male cast.
That's right.
Very, very rare, for then, but certainly rare now, where, you know, I guess they dabbled, they thought of having a female character in there at one point, but then Carpenter was kind of like, let's just make it all these dudes, you know, like,
it's a 12 Angry Men. If there was a woman, there'd be somebody probably having a different opinion, and they're all dudes, yeah, and there's testosterone. No, that's you, yeah, want that builds conflict.
Yeah. And everybody in it, you know, it's just the music, the moodiness, the sort of, I like the bleakness of it too. It's not just all the things we know and love, the moments and the head coming off and the chest, you know, all that. The scope of the alien craft when they, you know, just the realization of what the hell went on here. You know, I love that stuff. Just that creepiness, you know. No, it's great. That's my first. I'll put those two together.
You know, I own Zero Thing merchandise. I don't own anything based on the thing.
I can imagine that. I've got some stuff.
I have the Blu-ray stuff.
The head, you know, that Rob Bottin head that was in Starlog, those two faces that kind of, you know, melt.
Screaming along with him. I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. Screaming along with him. He's got the contact lenses in, you know, and he's doing that scream. There was one of those, like, remember when those subscription boxes were a thing where you'd get a, you know, there's like a goodie box you'd subscribe to, like the Funko subscription or something. And each month you'd get a box.
Oh yeah. I never did any of that, but I know what you're talking about.
No, I didn't either, but they made a resin like statue of those two heads
Oh, cool.
And the base just has the logo. It's about, you know, 5, 6, 4, 5, 6 inches high. And it's like green and it's got the thing on the base. And then it's that, it kind of like a little tree. All of a sudden the two faces come up. And I've got that on my shelf because I just love that. Because that immediately reminds me of Starlog. Like that.
Oh, yeah.
In Starlog with Platine.
That's funny. Yeah, the Starlog triggers.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Okay, give me another one. And these are in no order, obviously, but give me another one.
Okay, here. Yeah, this is one I tried to introduce this year. Mrs. and I had different suggestions, and I don't know how well this one worked because it was the first night, but I love it, and that is Horror Express, which is a version of The Thing.
It is. It absolutely is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell the folks at home in case they don't know.
It's a film that you would find like at every video store ever because it fell into public domain. And I believe it may have been like one of those movies that was made to fail. Like, you know, this is money laundering or, you know, I don't know.
Okay.
Because it was just something about how it got released despite its star power. It is a film made in Spain, I believe. The sets are from another movie. It is a, you know, Murder on the Orient Express type film. However, it involves an alien, frozen alien that's on the train that not only can emulate you, jump from body to body, but also like burn you out and make you a zombie. It's slightly different than the xenomorphic qualities of the 82 film, but it is actually, I believe, credited as based on the same story. And there's just some, you know, undeniable links, and it's a crazy movie.
Is it like 77 or 70?
I think it's like 72 or something like that.
Oh, no. Okay.
Yeah, or 72 or 74, because Peter Cushing's wife had died. And I believe that's how Christopher Lee took the film as well, because he was like, come on, let's go do this movie together. It was just basically an excuse to be with your buddy. Not that they're phoning it in. They're having fun. They're doing great.
Oh yeah. Don't forget the you know, Telly Savalas. Talk about
who can forget Captain Scenery Chew? And I mean, God bless him. He's killing it. You know, like just when the movie's about to dip a bit. Oh no.
No, it is one of those that when I did revisit it a few years ago, I mean, I hadn't seen it since forever.
Yeah.
And didn't remember a lot of it. And it really was like, as it kind of rolled out, you're like, oh, this is better than I remember. Like, this is a really pulpy, fun, is this something that doesn't ever get mentioned in the, you know, the same breath as a lot of Hammer stuff and things like that. But it's in that, it does feel like a Hammer film to me. It feels like,
it's definitely trying to ape that, aesthetic.
Yeah.
And it pulls it off. What kills me is I think Joe Dante talked about it ages and ages ago.
Okay.
About having, like, I think I looked at a little like short about him talking about the film, or maybe it was his Trailers from Hell. But there was something about like, I had to see it like in the worst Times Square theater. Like it was, he felt, and it was like a horrible print. And he felt like it was being mistreated on purpose. Despite having, you know, good star power and everything else, it is 72. And it's a quality film. It's well made.
It doesn't look cheap or anything. It doesn't look, you know, it looks like it's got a decent budget, and it's a period piece as well. Cause isn't it like in the turn of the century kind of thing? Is that when it is?
Yeah, it's set in 1906.
1906, okay.
Yeah, and it's got a great soundtrack that's haunting with that whistling that if you have the menu of the Blu-ray on, you're like, oh my God, where's the remote? But it is, yeah, it's just a kind of great atmospheric fun horror movie, you know, and it's something you haven't seen before. It's one of my favorites. Paul Naschy's in it. Wait, this thing says Paul Naschy's in it.
Paul Naschy's in it.
Yeah,
Really?
as the mad priest. Maybe it's just a brief. Have I forgotten more than I remember these days? I don't know. I think it's just a smaller a role for him, but
Huh.
yeah, I didn't know that one. But it also stars Helga Linney, who's also in Grasp of the Lorelei, and an actress I just love. You know, she should have been a Hammer gal.
Isn't there another face though, like another male, not Herbert Lom, but somebody like that? Is there somebody else in there? Or is it mainly Savalas, Cushing, and Lee? Am I getting mixed up with something else?
There's a Julio Pena.
No.
He and by the way, I just because I clicked on this and because we are who we are, his voice is dubbed by Roger Delgado.
No way, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, that's a small world.
Yeah. The master.
Wow.
Now
Interesting.
I'm gonna rewatch it just to see that.
You know, speaking of Delgado, he's in one of the Quatermass TV. I think
Yeah.
he's in the second one, maybe.
That's what I
Quatermass
wanted.
2.
You know, you brought up Quatermass and we were talking about Halloween 3, and I know I'm jumping around, but
Yeah.
did you ever think it was interesting that yeah, there's like a Stonehenge element to Halloween 3, and I know Nigel Neal kind of walked away from, you know, Halloween 3, but his Quatermass conclusion with John Mills in like 85,
Oh yeah, the hippie kids, the
yeah, it
hippies.
had all to do with like children in Stonehenge.
Yeah. Actually, I think it was earlier. I think it might have been like 80 or 81. It might have been earlier than 85.
Oh.
Because it's still coming off the hippie dippy stuff from the 70s. I feel like it's a little earlier, maybe. I don't know, but it was
Oh
that
my God, you're right.
great
It was
sequence.
79. I guess I
79.
saw them in the wrong. I don't know. Dang.
Yeah, it's I mean, the guy, you know, his track record, Nigel Neal, was really a really doesn't get talked about enough, I don't think, with conceptually the stuff he was coming up with and
Oh
how he was
no,
writing
but
and stuff.
sorry, I sidetracked that for something I should have Googled. I apologize.
No, but he's dipping, you know, it would make sense that he might dip into it again, especially I don't know if when that got aired in the US. I don't know when
Yeah,
that
maybe I got aired in
79.
'85 and that's why I can't.
Yeah, he might have gone, well, I'll just do the Stonehenge thing because nobody's seen the hippy dippy one I did.
Yeah.
It could be. But I love that he was a part of that. Okay, so none of the, you know, again, these are things to me that are just kind of like comfort foods
Yeah.
that are, you know, I can watch them anytime, but there's something about the time of the season.
Oh yeah.
And of course, I love Hammer horror, and I always pull out the box sets that I have, and the other ones like Trigon, the other one, Blood on Satan's Claw, shit like that. I love all that
I
stuff.
don't dig those
But
ones, but I
something
get it.
rather than pick one of those, that just kind of it's hard to pick one because you want to start with First of Frankenstein and move on to Dracula, and then do the Blood on the Mummy's Tomb and all that stuff we kind of started to talk about. I love Sleepy Hollow. I love the 1999 Tim Burton Sleepy Hollow
Oh.
because it feels like to me, it's always felt like if Hammer had a big budget, this is what it would be. And he's clearly, from the color of the blood to the tone to the lighting, everything, he's making a big budget Hammer horror picture, basically. And it really holds up to me, like the great cast. And the script is by Andrew Kevin Walker, who wrote Seven. Great Danny Elfman score,
Oh,
and
okay.
little nods to to the Disney ones. There's like certain frames in it that are taken right from the Disney Legend of what is it called, The Legend of Ichabod Crane or whatever that was basically.
Yeah.
But and it's each time I see it, I'm surprised again how dark it is, like how violent it is. You know, it is I believe it's R rated. I think it is. Maybe it's PG. No, I think it's rated R. I think it might be rated R. At a time when it might have been, you know, done more as a PG-13, but it made a ton of money. Mm-hmm. But it's just got that, and it's got Christopher Lee in it, and Michael Goff, and you know, Ian McNeice, and
Christopher Walken,
Richard Griffiths, Christopher Walken, what's her name?
Yeah, we know. Helena Bonham Carter.
Yeah, I can't think of. Yeah, Natasha Richardson. Not Natasha Richardson. Why can't I think of her name? Miranda Richardson.
Oh,
yeah. So I love it. It's just a comfort to me, and I love the look of the horseman and the, you know, the legend of the Hessian, you know, soldier and all that stuff. And it's creepy. It's good and creepy. So that's one of mine that I watch every year.
Oh, I understand that. Yeah. That movie didn't have the same effect on me, but I gotta tell you, when it came out, I was like really very seriously into karate and was doing it like four nights a week.
Okay.
And I missed a lot of movies because of that.
Wait, okay, so you're telling me that you didn't see it when it came out because you were doing karate four nights a week?
Yeah, in the theater.
You didn't see it in the theater because your life was filled with karate at that point.
At that point, yeah. And I was like real serious about it. And I'm not sure, you know,
you get into a social club kind of thing. Anyway.
Sure.
And
all the sexy karate guy. Yeah.
Yeah,
walking through the mall, pushing people around, walking through the mall.
I didn't say we as a group smelled good. But what I was trying to say is it was a healthy thing. And
yeah, no, you're much better off doing karate than going to see.
So I think I saw it on VHS and it just didn't have the same effect, you know?
Yeah, I just remember sitting in the theater just like, wow, this is, you know, and I don't know how many people in the theater with me are thinking Hammer horror, but that's what this kind of is.
Yeah. And he's an unabashed fan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you can always tell by the blood too. The blood, the coloring of that blood is so specific, and it's that bright red that's in the early Hammers where they kind of, you know, I think there's a shot maybe in the first Lee Dracula where you have the, I think it's a shot of the coffin and then this splat of bright red blood goes onto the coffin like before the movie even really starts. And it's kind of like them going, yeah, this is where we're going. This is what we are. This is, get ready, because this is, you know, we're not holding back. We're doing something new. And nobody had really done that. It hadn't really been that graphic. You could see why some of the Hammer stuff was so shocking at the time.
Oh, yeah.
It made a bundle. It says a lot that it did as well as it did, but how shocking some of it was. Like, people thinking this is the end of cinema as we know it because it's going this graphic, you know.
And then they went, hey, you know what, people like cleavage, and
that's right,
history was right.
Blood and cleavage, what a combo. Okay, what's your next one?
This one is going to seem so out of character for me. I probably brought it up before because
yes, George.
Yes, George, that's right.
I told you never to bring that film up again.
Which is a horror film in a way.
Yeah. But,
what's the one that's going to surprise me? Which one?
Okay. I am not a fan of slasher films. And my wife and I kind of bonded over one that I had not seen until I was an adult. And I watched it with her. Because of her like predilection with it, like she knew every scene in the film, and I was like, okay, and then that's what kind of got me. It was like, oh, you like sometimes, you know, like, yeah, I saw this, but they can't tell you anything that happened in it,
And in this
Okay.
one, she was going, "Oh yeah, no, this next scene, he's going to do this." And I'm like, "Wow, you." And yeah, it is sleepaway camp.
Oh my God, the old sleepaway camp.
Yep.
That is a movie that really has taken on another life
Oh yeah.
in the last 20 years or so. It was kind of like a video, like, oh, have you seen this yet? But because for obvious reasons, and the fact that the actress has made the rounds at conventions, and she's
Yeah.
always with Joe Bob, co-hosting things. It's taken on a whole other life, kind of. Now why, what is it? Is it, again, is it scary? Like, she thinks it's scary, or is it more of an affectionate thing, or a
Oh, this is definitely comfort food. Yeah.
comfort food? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
But I mean, it is a very creative kind of whodunit for the most part.
Oh yeah. Oh
You
yeah. Oh, absolutely.
know? And,
Yeah. That's one that really has become a like a
If you watch
classic.
it too, like if you're really like you've seen it a couple of times, you'll start to notice like, oh, that is definitely autumn and like late autumn, you know, because there's no way you're filming in a summer camp in the summer unless you're paying premium. So
Oh,
like a,
you mean like you can tell from the leaves
oh
changing and stuff?
yeah, all the leaves are falling and there's kids swimming and you're like, and then there's like one swimming scene in the film and you're kind of like, I think they filmed that on day one because the rest of the film the trees are just getting like redder and redder.
And I haven't seen it in a long time, but basically it's like there's a series of murders,
Yeah. Oh
like a
no,
blend kind of
what
thing.
it is there's a couple, it's a, I don't want to spoil it for people who haven't seen it, even though that seems ridiculous, but there's a tragedy at a camp, like on a lake, probably the lake where the camp is, I would assume. And a kid and their father die, leaving only one survivor, and you're not sure who the survivor is. And then you flash forward and you find out the survivor was the daughter, and she's with a crazy aunt. And boy, was that lady really good at this. I think she's the reason my wife likes this film so much, is just she is overacting, and you're gonna see this in another choice we have. But yeah, and then yeah, they go to the,
Was it a Canadian movie? Was that
it
a
is
Canadian
not a
film?
Canadian movie. It is I
Okay.
believe it was filmed like in Long Island or something. It has some really clever deaths and it and some really gruesome deaths, but it is a very creative film. And
Okay.
I've never seen the follow-up films. I've tried to watch them. I just don't really care. But yeah, that one's kind of like a fun one to re-watch for us
How
anyway.
many of those are there? How many sleepaway camp
Well, I
things are
think
there?
what this is a weird thing, and I don't know if you knew this, but like the actress who played in the first film, she didn't come back to the sequels, and it was Bruce Springsteen's sister.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
No, I definitely didn't know that.
Okay.
What? Wow. Had she done anything else?
I
Springsteen's
don't
sister?
know. I didn't
Oh my
even
God.
know. Like I've after the her name's Pamela Springsteen. I really don't know much about her.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I never knew that. Oh my God.
Oh,
Now I
apparently
maybe
she's
I
in
have to
Fast
revisit.
Times, but I don't know. She must not be a big part. I don't know.
Yeah, I got to revisit that one again.
Yeah. So
Okay,
she's
so
in
sleepaway camp.
she's in three of the Sleepaway Camp sequels. So there's at least three of them.
But not the one, the reveal, shall we say. She didn't end up in other ones? Is she only
I think
did one?
much later on she might have done something, but I really like this isn't a franchise for me.
Just the, got you. Just the one. Well, you know, it's
Yeah.
funny. We remember the time we were talking about Canadian stuff,
Oh, sure.
and we talked about Ginger Snap.
Uh-huh.
Did you ever see all of the Ginger Snap ones?
No.
See, they're all up on Prime right now, and you know, and I was like, oh well, I hadn't seen the other two, so I watched the second one, and it wasn't bad or anything. It just didn't have the, you know, it wasn't as good as the first one, shall we say. And then there's a third one that's like a prequel, that takes place like in the late 1800s with the two lead female characters, actors playing like ancient relatives of who they are in the first one, kind of thing, which I haven't seen yet. But I didn't know until we did that episode that there were multiple Ginger Snaps. In fact, the third one's called Ginger Snap Back.
Oh, that's right. I knew they existed, but I just never ran into them, to be honest with you.
Kind of a fun title. Okay, so I'll give my next one, which, you know, none of these are probably going to be very shocking to horror fans or listeners or what have you. The Exorcist. It's still, cliche as it is, it's for me still one of the scariest films ever made. It still holds up. It still resonates. It still has these little moments that you know, are supremely creepy and scary. I put myself in the place of people that would have been in the theater when that thing came out, and I can understand why it freaked everybody out the way it did. But then it becomes this massive cultural thing that people are waiting in line all day to see, and but it really is a game changer of a movie. And for me, all the there are certain things in time, there are certain watermarks that kind of, even if it's not my bag, I can appreciate that. Yeah, that was a, you know, that was a huge monumental thing that happened or whatever. And
Oh yeah, like this is not my kind of subject matter. I'm not that big into it, but I can't not admit that this film's impact on pop culture was
yeah,
like insane. When they're still parodying it. They're still parodying it.
and it doesn't, it's never made me want to seek out other, you know, there's a million exorcism type movies, and
Oh
The
yeah,
Exorcist and Burning
I
Rose and
would
whatever.
heartily suggest Abby and Nurse Sherry.
I've seen Abby. I've definitely seen Abby.
Oh, I love Abby. Nurse Sherry's really good too. It's basically.
But that's more, those are more like almost remake kind
It's Grindhouse ripoff crap. Yeah, but
yeah, Grindhouse, Grindhouse.
and
Yeah,
that
but
that's.
I'm saying that it's like you know, you know, regardless of what anybody thinks of it, something like Seven as a concept where you go, okay, there's a person out there that's committing these murders, adhering to the seven deadly sins. That's pretty big and biblical and sort of epic in its concept. Every other serial killer type thing afterwards just pales in comparison. So for me, like there's The Exorcist, and then there's 8,000, you know, possession exorcism type things, and it can't help but, you know, when you do see it, it reminds you of the granddaddy kind of. It's
Oh,
nothing
of
has ever kind
course.
of come close to the feeling of it.
Oh, no. Yeah, it's a tough
Not
one
that
to
those
get
other things are
back.
bad or anything, you know, like the what's the one that like in, you know, I don't know, is Insidious like a possession thing, or the one The Conjuring, you know, or maybe the mother's kind of I mean, there's all different facets, and it's not like those things aren't good or well done. It's just, you know, this is the high watermark to me, and it's kind of the gold standard, if you will. And it still scares me, still creeps me out. You know, it does. It's the part that creeps me out the most almost is the is when he takes the, he records her talking and he takes it to the university or the school or wherever it is. And he's trying to figure out, is it Latin? Is it gibberish? You know, what is she speaking? And then the guy that's doing the analysis is like, oh, it's English. English. Like, yeah, she's speaking English, but it's backwards. That still always gives me like, oh, that's really creepy. And, you know, and just the everybody in it, Ellen Burstyn and Max von Sydow and Jason Miller, like they're all, you know, it's remarkable that that thing happened the way that it did, and still gets me. So that's one of mine.
No,
what's your next one?
I'm going to go with one that I tried to introduce this year. I think it went over well, but I don't know if we'll bring it back, which is Wild Zero.
Wild Zero. Okay, help me out.
Guitar Wolf?
Wild Zero, the Guitar Wolf?
Okay, so there's a band in Japan called Guitar Wolf.
Okay, okay.
And they produced, I think they co-produced or made this film that it's like Night of the Living Dead meets Rock and Roll High School meets Kiss meets the Phantom of the Park. And there's other elements, I believe, to your surprise, but I highly recommend it. It's a Japanese film. It's basically about one character who is looking, you know, he's a huge fan of the band Guitar Wolf, and he accidentally saves the or protects the lead singer and lead guitarist Guitar Wolf, and they become blood brothers. And then the next couple of days there's a zombie invasion, so he ends up and there's other characters, you know, there's some would-be criminals that are terrible, and some other, you know, weapons dealers, that sort of thing. But it's a little I don't think it's influenced at all by Shaun of the Dead, because I think it came out before but you know, there's that same kind of vibe to it in some regards. And it's a really fun and interesting movie, and I don't know, it's just a little more quirk this year. I should have actually figured out if you'd seen it or not.
No, I'm gonna find it. Called what, something Zero? What was it called?
Wild Zero.
Wild Zero. Okay.
Yeah,
I'll look for that.
Yeah. I read about it decades ago. Like, I think it came out like 2000 or 2001. And one of the things I always thought was like, I loved the name. And if I ever opened like a collectibles shop or something like that, that would be the name of the store.
Mm.
And, yeah, it's something that I'm fond of the band. I'm fond of the film. It's kind of silly. It's very tongue in cheek. You know, and there's a lot to like about it.
So this goes back like 20 years or
yeah,
maybe over 20 years.
Yeah. Again? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They okay. Always wanted to do a follow-up, but I guess they just couldn't find the money. And that's a shame, because this is a little bit above your regular fare.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the zombie one that I think we had talked about? I think I was turned on to it by our buddy Matt Weinholt, but it's something of the dead, one hit to the dead or something of the dead or one shot to the dead. You ever see that? I think it's Japanese, where they're making, it's like a found footage within a movie, kind of, where they're making a zombie thing, but then a real zombie thing happens and it keeps.
I've heard of that, but I don't think I've personally seen it.
I think you would dig that.
Yeah.
I think you would, I can't think of the name of it, something, one shot of the dead or something like that, I think.
Huh.
Very strange, but it's the way it plays with the narrative is is really something. Okay, so I love werewolf, as you know. So I'm going with Wolfen. No, I would.
I know it's a company of wolves.
I'm gonna do what you did with the double whammy, because I think I'm allowed, because it's the same year. They're literally only months apart, and oddly enough, both are horror mixed with comedy. And so I'm gonna put The Howling and An American Werewolf in London kind of
all right.
double bill.
Yep.
And having rewatched The Howling again this year, I love American Werewolf, don't get me wrong, but I start to lean toward The Howling only because it's more pulpy. It's more, it's very much, winking at the past, and clearly, Dante is the John Sayles script, the humor in it and everything. Whereas some of the humor in American Werewolf is more broad and doesn't work. It doesn't hit my funny bone the way the Howling does. And they're a really strange combination of, for all the things we know, that Baker was going to do Howling, and then he goes off to do Werewolf because Landis had been talking about it for almost 10 years. And then Rob Bottin does Howling, and they're both kind of comedic and blah, 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 blah. It ends up being kind of a fun double bill, and that you've got two very, very different looking werewolves in the two movies.
No, absolutely.
Much as I like the On All Fours American Werewolf, I really like the size, the height of the werewolf in werewolves in The Howling.
Yeah.
The only drawback, and again, it's like 50, half a dozen, six to one, half a dozen, blah, 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 is the transformation scene in American Werewolf is better, because the transformation scene, and again, this, I hate to do this because it sounds like you're looking at something from a certain period with modern eyes and nitpicking, and I don't mean to, because I still love it and still love what I'm seeing. It's just they could have used a tighter sort of edit on the transformation scene, only because she stands there.
Oh, yeah.
Every time you cut back to her screaming, it's like, well, run. What are you doing? Get out of there. Like, she wanted to see what the end result was. I got to finish. I got to see this through. I got to see what he's going to look like.
Yeah, it's like the He-Man transformation sequence. You could leave.
Yeah. It's kind of like, okay, she's looking at her watch. They cut back. She's like, come on. Like, get this. Where are the teeth? Let's do this. And it's just weird. It's a weird movie. It's a weird. It's got a weird tone to it, and I love the hippy dippy stuff because it reminds me of Bill Kaufman's Body Snatchers. Riffing on the San Francisco New Agey, therapy kind of scene. What he's doing with Howling, with this, this retreat that you can go off to, and it turns out they're all freaking werewolves. And of course, it's got one of my favorite nude scenes of all time. We all know about that. I gotta put them in the same, like a same little double bill. And it's weird that they were like 4 or 5 months apart, I think, when they came out.
Yeah.
And Wolfen came out that summer too, I think.
Here's Wolfen, which is completely different, if I'm not mistaken. Like it doesn't really, it's not really a Wolfman movie.
No, not exactly. It does an interesting spin.
Yeah.
But I think my experiences with those films was, for some reason, I managed to watch a VHS of that when I was far too young, of American Werewolf in London. And it actually did kind of like shock the hell out of me as a kid. But for mm-hmm. some reason, The Howling would just be on TV. I'm sure with some of the, more explicit parts out, but I think I watched The Howling like two or three times a weekend once, because like my
on You're saying on commercial
Yeah, on commercial television, but it
okay.
just didn't have that same effect on me, and I liked it. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, they're both kind of, well, Howling was the first R-rated thing I snuck into for
Yeah.
that sequence that we've talked about. But both became, you know,
That for the
rental.
audience, that is John Carradine getting naked.
Yes, it's John Carradine's first and only full frontal scene
That's right. Yeah.
in a film, never to be forgotten. That's a transformation scene you don't want to miss. But they just they're in that basket of VHS rentals from the early 80s, The
Oh, yeah.
Thing and The Howling and American Werewolf. Just and my cousin David, and he was only a couple years older than me. And I don't know how he was managing to rent these things. He
I
wasn't
think
old enough
Cousin
to.
David is your Tyler Durden.
He well, he certainly was shady like Tyler Durden. He was the he brought out the worst in me for certain. But he would he'd like come on over. You know, like if I get if my aunt had to babysit whatever, and I go over there, he'd have, you know, like a 2 or 3 day rental on, and we'd watch The Thing over and over. I mean, we memorized it. Like there's moments in The Thing still that I kind of chuckle at that we found fascinating as kids that we laughed at. You know, like when Wilford Brimley has the gun, he goes, "I'll kill you," and he kind of shoots the like the way he says it. I see it today, and I still think about being, you know, 12 years old, laughing at the way he said it in the movie. But that's where that between the magazines that we had and then rentals, where the education it was kind of it seemed a little kind of illicit. You know, like you were kind of you were getting in, you were seeing things that you weren't supposed to. You know.
Yeah.
Because they're
Oh.
R-rated and you know you weren't ready for them basically,
That's right.
so
Forbidden
there you go.
fruit.
So that's okay. Yeah. So what's your next one?
Okay, this is the one my wife suggested, and I think it got me to do it bought me some freedom to suggest some stuff that maybe she wouldn't be into. But it was Troll 2.
Troll 2, is that the one where he goes to space? Or that's Leprechaun? I'm thinking of
That's
Leprechaun.
Leprechaun, and
Wait, Troll, is this the Norwegian one? The Norwegian one about the
no,
Norwegian? Oh,
it is the sequel to the in name only sequel to the movie Troll, the Charles Band film star.
ah, right.
Yeah, and it was, of course, I think the feature of at least one documentary called like Best Worst Movie or something like that.
Oh, that one. Yeah, okay. Yeah,
Yeah.
that's so there's a second one that they made
No,
off of that.
that is the one they made off of that.
Oh.
The first Troll has nothing to do with that. It's Troll 2,
Okay.
where they just tacked the Troll name onto a film that was completely unrelated, and they really didn't try, because it really was, I think, a movie called Goblins or something like that. And
Okay.
which is the entire, like, there are goblins in the movie, the town's called Nilbog. This is another one where it's like Schadenfreude acting. The main villain, other than the overacting trolls people, is this woman who's like playing like a druid or something like that, again with the Stonehenge theme. And she is, I don't, she is just really over the top and kind of awesome. Her performance is so good, and that is what brings us together on that film. Now, that one I had to kind of say, look, I'll watch that one, but can we watch like the riff tracks? Because that movie is like, it's a tough thing to watch. You want a little bit of sugar on that.
Gotcha. So these are more not so much scary, spooky Halloween treats. They're more not campy, but you know, they're a little more Well, slightly ironic, I guess. I mean, if you're saying how bad Troll 2 is, but that's something you would watch every year, kind of.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really view it as like getting scared every time we do it. It's more just having fun with it. But
right.
And there's, you know, there's some no-go zones. It's okay.
Well, I mean, I don't mean necessarily getting, like, I'm not sitting here in a puddle curled up in the fetal position watching, you know, The Howling or something. I just mean the essence of what a horror movie is.
Oh, well, by the way, American Werewolf in London, The Thing, we do include that in the rotation.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Oh, yeah. I should just mention that. It's like, You're mentioning things we do watch. I just don't want to do a double take on that.
I mean, I wish it were. I the times where I wish the American Werewolf, you know, that it, you know, the two of them at the beginning, you know, Griffin Dunne and David Naughton.
Yeah.
Everything that kind of happened. I wish we were in that world longer. You know, because it does feel like an old school werewolf movie, and the townspeople and, you know, tradition and whatever. And because it switches gears once he's at the hospital, and then the comedy starts to kick in more. And I mean, Denny Agutter, I mean, you don't get much better than that, to have Denny Agutter as your nurse.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really kicks up a notch. With like, this doesn't seem ethical, Jenny. You're his nurse. I don't think
shut up, Jason.
Putting him up at your apartment, you're gonna get fired. and she does fall for him fairly quickly.
Yeah, no, the movie is on fast forward. You're right.
Yeah. It all happens very quickly. And the tonal shift, I understand why it's an acquired taste for people. The Howling, I think, did better than American Werewolf. I think it did better than American Werewolf. Maybe I'm wrong.
Didn't American Werewolf get nominated for Academy Award, though?
It was actually the first time that the special makeup effects category was introduced to the Oscars. The inaugural won and was given to Rick Baker for American Werewolf.
Yeah,
started the whole kind of hard to believe it took that long to have that category. It's really strange that it because there was plenty of cool makeup stuff done, you know, prior to that.
Yeah, John Chambers, anyone?
You know, Little Big Man. Exorcist, Planet of the Apes movies, for God's sake.
Yeah.
Okay. So my next one, we watch so much stuff. I have so many, you know, piled up to go through and stuff. And I kind of wanted to do something lighter, so I thought maybe something like Shaun of the Dead, which isn't even my favorite of that trilogy, or The Wolf of Snow Hollow, which I've endorsed many times on this show, and I keep pushing people to see, because without giving anything away, it's just a different kind of werewolfy kind of movie. Or I even thought of Ghost Stories, the portmanteau film that the British one that was done a couple years ago was based on a stage play that I've talked about. But all that aside, I think I'm going to go with The Bride of Frankenstein.
Oh,
I think is
James
Whale's masterpiece. Just the tone of it, the look of it, the, you know, Elsa and Karloff in it, and Dr. Pretorius, when he shows up, and he's as queeny and, you know, Rip Taylor-y as anybody's ever been in the 30s.
I didn't pick up on that at all.
Very lots of gay undertones throughout.
Where?
James, certainly in Bride of Frankenstein, it is out and proud, and it's just I think it's his masterpiece. I think it's just
I think you're crazy.
It's crazy. It's a crazy movie when you think about it. It's really It's really kind of batshit.
Oh yeah, no, I just watched it with my daughter a month ago. I came home. Okay. I was having a rough day, and she's like, "Hey, you want to watch like a Universal Monsters movie?" And she wanted to know more. I was like, "Yeah, let me put on the Bride of Frankenstein," because I just thought that one would have a really like a lot going for it, and I do actually adore it. I think it's a great film. I don't think I would change a thing about it, but it is also very quirky and has layers to it.
Yeah, it's I mean, just when I think about her design, you know, the sort of Nefertiti, you know, hair and the all of that, it's just God, you know what I mean, Jack Pierce, you know, it's just like just incredible artistry. And you know, I mean, Karloff is just, you know, what's the one I just watched recently that was it's actually up on HBO Max. What is it called? The Island of the Dead. Is that the one?
I don't know.
Where he's like a general and they get stranded on this island where they think there's a not a chupacabra, but it's called Valvorka, I think it's called, like in ancient Greece or something. There's this entity that supposedly sucks the energy from another person and kills them, kind of thing. And it's maybe in this house. And he's just a comfort, Karloff, you know, in everything. Just seeing him, we're so lucky to
have
had him.
Yeah, he had a great energy.
Yeah, but The Bride is one that when I do revisit it, it kind of sort of not timeless, but it seems out of time in a way. But like you say, the themes in it, the vibe, Pretorius is like, hello, Frisco. I mean, he's just, you know, he just dominates every scene, and it's really out there. You know,
I really just don't see it.
Bold. Yeah, watch it again. You might catch it.
I don't know, man. Seems
give it another.
Give it right another to try. Me.
Open your mind. How about some honorable mentions that you just want to throw in to tell people?
Oh, sure.
If you haven't seen this, check this out.
I'm very fond of Creature.
That's the alien rip. It's the alien ripoff that has Simone from Pee Wee's Big Adventure in it, right? Isn't she in it?
Yeah, I think you're right. And
big tall woman.
Thanks, Mr. Skin.
yeah, he's in it.
But it's one of the better alien clones in that, like, they capture the look and vibe, and then really is the film, it's more of a Planet of the Vampires rip. And I think I've been on this path before, and I won't fill the world with my crazy, but I kind of think Creature is more like, I realize that Ridley Scott had not seen Planet of the Vampires when he made Alien. And I do think that the people who made Creature had seen Planet of the Vampires and Alien.
Okay.
But then I do kind of think, like, when Ridley Scott made Prometheus, he had seen everything.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's safe to say.
Yeah.
So Creature, you prefer Creature to Alien, is what you're saying?
No. No, I would never say it was the same quality. No. Okay. But it is a good film. It is a good knockoff.
I rented it way, way, way back. I think with my older brother. And we, you know, one of those visits to the video store where we just were like, what about this? What about this? Couldn't agree. And then we saw this one and went, well, maybe it's like Alien. Maybe it's you know, and then kind of watched it at home and kind of made fun of it because it was so. But I mean, I was, you know, it was a long time ago. Maybe I was more discerning when I was 15 or whatever. But I did see it. And I remember seeing Simone going, hey, that's the lady that was in it was Simone in Big Adventure.
And it's Ferris Bueller's bad. Isn't it?
Is Kinski in it too?
Yes.
Is Klaus Kinski? Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And that would be enough always for a film, you know? Oh, my God. There's always Klaus Kinski on this planet.
Always a sign of quality when you get him into one of those sci-fi.
I can't remember the horrible film I was watching, and Klaus Kinski showed up, and I thought, oh my God, like, it was, I think it was a spaghetti Western, Bruce Lee spoof that really, I don't like,
sounds about
what
right.
Was he doing there? And I think they only got him for a day, but it was like, wow, even for Klaus Kinski, this is low.
There's a story. I thought of this the other day because I saw him, a clip of something. And I believe there's a story about him. I mean, he was insane. I don't think was just like, that wasn't a euphemism. I think he was genuinely batshit insane. Probably should have been locked up. But he had a... fist in his throat that had been causing him discomfort for a long time. Oh my God, I'm going to dry heave. The story goes that he didn't go to the doctor for it, but eventually took out a steak knife and got it down his throat and pierced the fist, which was filled with pus. God, sorry. Oh my God. Which was filled with pus. And proceeded to vomit up the pus or whatever was left in him, and then got on with his day, and problem solved. Broke this dick.
Who hasn't done some self surgery?
And went right back out on set and finished the movie, the scene that he was in, or whatever it was. Did you ever seen any of that Documentary Now series? You know, like each one is a different episode. They're spoofing a type of documentary.
No, I don't think I have. Salesman.
It's really good. But it's all, you know, like there's a music one, and there's one about traveling salesmen. There's one about politics. They're all sort of pimping a different kind of well-known documentary. And there's a two-part one that is called Soldier of Yellow, I think it's called, or something. And it's basically riffing on the relationship between Werner Herzog and
okay.
And this Herzog character, played by Alexander Sarsgaard, recounts this story of a time many years ago when he had double booked, where he was doing a documentary about this indigenous people up in Nepal that no, you know, camera had ever caught a glimpse of, and documenting their history and, you know, they're sort of kind of, you know, cut off from civilization, that no one had ever really been able to expose. But he also double booked doing a pilot for CBS called, you know, Daddy Nanny or something. And so they bring the set to Nepal and try to shoot this pilot at the same time he's doing this documentary. And then the lead guy that he gets to be in it is like, he's actually played by the German guy from Inglourious Basterds, the one who, when they're in the basement where he catches them in a lie, he catches Fassbender in the lie. That dude is riffing on Kinski and just like pulling guns out and threatening to kill
Christoph
people.
Waltz?
It's really funny. Say again?
Christoph Waltz?
No, not Christoph Waltz. In Inglourious Basterds, when they get into the basement, that pub in the basement.
Oh.
And then Fassbender gives it away by doing the sign of three the wrong way.
Yeah, you gotta use your thumb.
And the one Nazi's like, oh no, you're full of shit. That Nazi dude is playing a version of Klaus Kinski.
Okay.
In this, document. It's very, very funny. It's a very good parody, if you will, of such things. So I highly recommend it. I was gonna say I love haunted house stuff. I was gonna mention the famous what am I saying? Haunting, the black and white.
Oh yeah,
Haunting.
Nobody thought the remake,
which is great. Don't do the remake. See the original if you can. But also, another go-to that I tend to watch every year is the 78th Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Oh, yeah.
That's another one to me that just, you know, it always works.
What's your thoughts on the Abel Ferrara remake?
Which one?
The remake, the 90s remake. The Abel Ferrara?
Oh, the Abel Ferrara one. Yeah, yeah. It's not bad. I kind of think that the three of them, the 50s one and then the 78 and then that one, are very, different. Same idea, same story, but they're done differently. And so I think that the Ferrara one kind of, stands on its own pretty well. I don't think it's in the league of the first two, especially the second one. But I think it's good. I think they did it. Didn't they do another one that was like the Puppet Masters, which is kind of a riff on?
Well, I think
a Robert Heinlein.
Yeah, that's the Robert Heinlein. Yeah, but they also I think did another Body Snatchers movie with like Nicole Kidman, that
with
nobody.
Nicole Kidman and
Daniel Craig.
Yes, yeah, you're right. Yeah, and I think it was called The Invasion or something like that.
Yeah,
maybe.
It's I think
right.
The concept shall return.
Well, I'll tell you, when you think about when the original was made and what was going on in the country at the time, nothing changed. This notion of, stay awake, be alert,
watch,
you go to the sky, and they get you.
Yeah.
Watch the sky, It's as relevant now as it was way back when, and the 78 one really, it's another example of something that was like a PG movie at the time that you look at now and you go, boy, this is really graphic for a PG movie. That's kind of how they were back then. There's a lot of violence. And
I had that movie spoiled by the photo novel. In the basement of a Woolworths next to the bus station.
Yep.
Yeah.
I had that photo novel, and that even the page of the dog man in the photo novel scared the crap out of me.
Yeah,
still one of those ones.
It was a really good effect, and that sort of goes back to Sleepaway Camp, where it's like, wow, those effects were pretty good for the time, especially.
Maybe the camera lingered a little too long on one of them, but
somebody was talking about the Omen. I saw a bit of a doc, I forget what it was now, but they were talking about the Omen,
yeah,
and the scene with Patrick Troughton,
yeah,
where and the guy, he was like, today you would, it would take weeks to do, you would set it up with CGI and you'd have a double and blah, blah, blah. And they described the way they did it, which is just like a fishing line. Slid the thing down from, and then Troughton kind of did the move in shot, and there's your iconic effect getting pierced on the graveyard lawn, basically. Like, it took 5 minutes.
That reminds me of the Get a Life episode where it's like emulating E.T. and his alien friend at the end is being pulled up, and you can clearly see that it's just rope. And Chris goes, look, they're levitating him back to his ship. And Brian Doyle Murray was his roommate at the time, Gus. And he just kind of goes, dummy, it's a big rope.
I watched one the other day, this is a couple of weeks ago, where he mailed away for a life-size submarine.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Comic. And builds it in the house, but then it starts filling up with water, and they need to get rescued.
Dude, great when that was in the TV guide, and this is back in the day when you didn't know if it would ever come back, and I read that description, I had to be home to make sure I could tape that. Because I just didn't trust the world, because I just needed to see. That felt so specifically written to me, because I loved comic book ads.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's they're all up on. I think the whole series is up on YouTube. So
oh, that's good.
I dip into it now.
Yeah,
yeah, it's great.
Yeah. I put one or two on here.
There's a couple of marathons for listeners. Now you've learned more about us as you do each episode, and more of our watching and listening habits. And you too can put these things on in the privacy of your home and think of us and our favorite for the holiday.
We could also give dance or instructions.
You could give dance instructions.
Yeah. You know,
so there you go.
We were doing the King Kong episode, and I called it Badder Than Old King Kong.
Yeah,
my brain always goes one place, which was like in grade one, they would drag us down to the gym for exercise. And, you know, it was what it was. But my teacher just had a tape that was like Bad, Bad Leroy Brown. And then like somebody would just dub in the middle, like so be singing along. I mean, and then sit ups. Would come.
What?
Yeah, like somebody had done this. I think it was my teacher did this, like, you know, interrupted the song and changed the exercise on us.
Wow. I remember square dancing
in
gym class. I think there was a you know, week or whatever it was, however many times you went to the gym. I forget how it was every day, but there was a chunk of time there where it was, we're going to learn to square dance. And there were square dance records. And I remember, because this just came up the other night, the gym teacher would play this record about called Chicken Fat. And it was like a motivational thing to say, you know, go you chicken fat, go, like you're all fat. You need to get into shape, you know, and, you know, and he'd sort of sing it along with the record. Even as a kid, I'm going, this is a bit much, isn't it? Kind of like, you know, back off. We're 8 years old. Like, I don't know if you need to call anybody fat in this class. But it also made me think of it. Did you do the parachute thing? Do you remember the parachute thing?
Oh.
Where they would, you'd spread out in a circle in the gymnasium and they'd bring out like a parachute, a round bit of canvas, and there was a ball. That the idea was like, get it over to Tammy, and then you try to flick your end of it to get it over the other side. Do you remember that?
No.
You think about it now and just go, we probably look like a bunch of mental patients. Like, it's a dumb, I don't understand what that was supposed to do for coordination or for, you know, a workout or anything. The parachute thing. In those little scooters that were little squares with the four wheels, was a square that you could sit cross-legged on or kneel on and then, you know, scoot yourself along with the palm. It was like total death hazard. You get your fingers caught under them, and or they'd slip out from underneath your butt and shoot across the floor and all these weird.
I don't think my school had any of these resources.
Yeah, well, maybe
we had some stinky mats, dude.
We had stinky mats. We definitely had stinky mats, and we had the old school red dodgeballs, which were one of the greatest things ever invented. The red dodgeball.
Oh yeah, my favorite thing in the world.
Never made sense to me. Doing the parachute thing. But so that's it. You got some more time before the big day to enjoy some of these things. Build, you know, eat as much candy as you can, and let's keep the spirit of Halloween going throughout the year, I say. Not just
Absolutely. Monsters aren't just for October.
That's right. Also, because we have to, because they're cutting into our October. The man and Christmas is cutting into our celebrating. No, so you know what? Back. We get to spend it throughout the year then, I say.
Yeah, that's right. And
you know,
give monsters this Christmas.
That's right. That's right. They need love too.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Here's our 2 for 25.
Yeah. And we'll be back this November with non-monster topics, maybe.
Our favorite Thanksgiving movies.
Oh my God. Don't make me pick.
All right. Good stuff.
All right. Take care, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
Yeah.